Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special edition of Baseball America Hot Sheet. It is a roundtable edition. There's going to be some healthy debate about rankings. The MLB draft is coming up this weekend, and we've got our usual Carlos Collazo covering draft coverage here for Baseball America, senior baseball writer at The Athletic, and a longtime friend here, Keith Law, joining us right now on the show. We spoke to him last year during the draft. We're going to talk to him on Sunday during the draft as well. Make sure you check out all of Keith's coverage over at The Athletic. We'll give some more plugs on everything that they're doing there coming up. And Shooter Hunt is joining us, VP of Scouting at Prep Baseball Report. You can follow him and all the coverage he's got going on over at Shooter Hunt, H-U-N-T. Shooter is the name. Shooter, great to have you on. I know you less than the other two here, but we're excited. Are you ready to battle a little bit?
Oh, I'm ready to battle. I'm also ready for this draft to actually happen. It's so late now.
It is July. It is mid-July. And Keith, great to have you as well. I actually just start here real quick before we dive in, because I know you can give it to me straight. This draft is what in your mind when you look at it overall? Like, what comes to mind?
Can I say that on air? Like, is there the FCC yeah. might get involved?
You're good on this show.
Oh, it's horseshit. This is a really bad draft class. And it's not just me, right? I think everybody agrees this is just not a good crop. Just not to say there aren't good players. There will be good players. There will be big leaguers. But when you look at the class as a whole, right, this ain't it. This ain't it at all. This is not what we're used to. And I think we all got so spoiled. Last year was just such an epic draft class. I've been saying all spring that might be the best class, certainly the best of my career, might be the best I ever have the privilege to cover. So to go from that to this, where the college pitching is down, the high school position players are down, we don't have the, you know, Cruz Langford Skeens at the top. Yeah, it definitely feels like a big drop off.
You guys are all great, but Carlos, I went to Keith there for a reason. I felt like I needed something like that to really just hit people, even though obviously we're going to go over some specific names and who could pop, and not just, you know, who could maybe rise up a board, but also who could eventually shine in the big leagues. But I know you've been talking to me about this for a while too, Carlos. This is not a sunshiny draft.
No, I don't think so. Before we got on, we were talking about, like, is this the worst draft class we've ever covered? And for Keith, he's been doing a lot longer than me, but I think it definitely is for myself going back to 2017. And I think the point he made about it just coming on the back of 23 is so tough because that class was so fun and so exciting. But like he said, I think even with the 2019 draft class, I remember that class getting critiqued a lot for the depth and the college pitching not being up to snuff. It turned out better than we expected. And I would imagine there are going to be a lot of players in this class, like every other draft class, who wind up just being better than we think on draft day. There are going to be surprises. There always are. That's why the draft is so fun to cover. Maybe it would be nicer to know in the first place, but that's what makes it challenging and fun to evaluate.
And Shooter, just curious for your thoughts, and we'll dive into some specifics here. So I think when I've been trying to explain to some people that don't, you know the draft too well, casual fans, you know, what's lacking, is it the quality at the top? Is it the depth all around, or a little bit of everything? Like, what stands out the most to you about it?
Well, I will say I'm the eternal optimist, so there will be big leaguers in this crew. I won't crush it too hard, but just equating the start, like, there's only so many top tier value defining high school guys in this draft, and then even going beyond, guys like Connor Griffin, Cam Caminiti, who are actually in the 2025 group. You take them out of 24, this might get even worse. But there's tons of depth, not as many quote unquote five stars, but there's a lot of four stars, and I've really been harping on the quantity has a quality unto its own. You can get a lot of talent here, build, and like all the guys are saying, there will be future big leaguers in this bunch. The risk just has not been mitigated quite enough throughout the spring to the point where everybody feels confident in Bobby Witt Jr. or Adley Rutschman going back to 2019.
And also, I want to let everyone know you can load up questions that you have, and I'll mix those in. That'll be my job here to do a little moderating during the show. So, Keith, now that we've kind of crapped on it, let's talk up some names, okay? So let's get people excited for real. Let's find some gems. So can you first just start by telling me some of your favorite players towards the top? If you have a comp that you can relate someone to in the majors, that always helps the crowd as well, at least for a guy that you want to throw out there.
So I'm in the Charlie Condon camp. I've got him number one on my board. And I think there's a lot of disagreement over who the actual top guy in this draft is, which is fine. And we should talk about a lot of those candidates. But Condon, to me, is the guy who offers upside. Obviously, there's some probability, right? He just won the Golden Spikes Award. He had an unbelievable season for Georgia. It's hit, power. He's a good athlete. He gets physically compared a lot to a young Chris Bryant. Actually, remember seeing Chris Bryant both in college and in high school. I think Condon's a little twitchier, a little faster, maybe not the same sort of brute strength that Bryant had at the same age, but still, you're getting comp to a guy who was rookie of the year and then MVP. So it's pretty good. And to me, if you're Cleveland picking at the top, you can go a little safer with Travis Bizana or maybe JJ Weatherholt, who I'm sure we'll spend some time talking about because he's really interesting right now. But Condon is that you got a chance for a franchise-altering player who might hit third, fourth, second, if you're smart about it, in your lineup for a long time. And also, you don't draft for need, but I will say Cleveland's had a hard time developing power bats. So I could see there's a little bit more of a siren call with a guy like Condon who has that elite power upside that some of the other candidates lack.
Yeah, I entirely agree. I mean, we have Charlie Condon number one on our board. I think ultimately, ours is an industry-based list, so it's really what the scouts are telling us, trying to get the consensus on that as much as possible. But really, the most important things for hitters are the hit and the power tools, and I think Condon probably offers the best combination of hit power in this class. For me personally, I really am intrigued by JJ Weatherholtz. I like him quite a bit. I like the pure hitting ability. But if you ask me on draft day, who was I taking 1-1, I think just the upside potential you get with a guy like Condon is super tough to pass up on. And the fact that he's also done it in the SEC for 2 years, I think is maybe a separator from guys like Travis Bizana and Weatherholtz. I think the competition is just at the absolute best in college baseball in the SEC. And so maybe there's a little bit more confidence in his ability to do that moving forward. Although at the same time, Bizana has a pretty lengthy track record of wood bats. JJ Weatherholtz, same thing. He performed really well with USA Baseball, but we view it similarly, and I view it similarly as well, as what Keith was just saying.
I think any of those guys is a good choice, and we're definitely the highest on Jack Caglione. He seems to be polarizing at this point in the industry, and he and our high school number one, Bryce Rainer, guys start to finish for us, and from Cags, the chase rate was something to watch in. I got a couple stats here, but he cut his K rate from 18% to 8%, tripled his walk rate, and he increased his ISO. So like there was some, he did better himself there. Obviously the power projection, left-handed bat, you bring into the fact that, oh yeah, he's throwing 100 from the left side, but I don't like to take two parts and bring it into a hole. Taking the bat first, power potential there, you really can't go wrong with those four at the top. But going over to the high school side, Bryce Rainer, if you wanted to comp, if you like him at the high end, and shoot, I don't think Cleveland's going to do this, but if you said 1-1, we want to get this guy, you're envisioning Corey Seager. He's 6'3", 200 pounds, runs like a gazelle, hits left-handed. There's power projection there. The frame's still going to come together. Can stick at shortstop, plus arm across. Oh, yeah, he's also, I think he's number two on our board as a right-handed pitcher, too. But that's kind of the dream for a guy like Bryce Rainer. But those two at the top, and I really think eventually we'll get into this Kegs versus Condon versus Bizana versus Weatherholt. I think Cleveland at the top is probably shopping around, trying to get a haircut there. But in the end, they need to choose who they believe in the best.
Well, let's get into this. I mean, it's one of the bigger topics. And, you know, Carlos, you can kick off that where you kind of see everything lying, and also, you know, the response there on how high they have Jack Cags and maybe a counter on it.
Yeah, well, I think at some point it'd be interesting to talk about like process of our rankings as well, because I think this group is actually really interesting because we all might have slightly different processes and what our goals are. So that could be cool. But the reason that we have Caglione fifth, I think he's in like the top five reasonably in that range for a lot of the industry. It's funny because at Baseball America, like a lot of us staffers personally, if this was like our individual rankings, we would be a little bit lower than that on Cags. I think we talked about on this show a little bit throughout the spring. But for us, the question is really the chase and what is the pure hit tool? I think for me, the separator with Condon and Caglione, and a scout told me this spring, it was like with Condon, you have similar power to Jack, but with a significantly better hit tool. And you also have a little bit more defensive versatility. And so I think that is a bit of a separator. I do think to Jack's credit, he did a nice job of cutting that strikeout rate. He's still very aggressive. He's one of the most aggressive players that we'll see drafted in the first round in terms of out of the zone swings. I think there is a little bit he can do mechanically. You're even seeing it in some videos here. He really leaks out. I imagine those are some areas that he's going to fix in the future if he's just focused on hitting. And I do think he probably should just focus on hitting. I would view him as more of like a third round talent as a pitcher. There's a lot of reliever risk. So I don't think the Ohtani comps are realistic. I don't think we should comp anyone to Ohtani, to be quite honest. So really, it's just the hit quality and the defensive profile that do make him polarizing. But at the same time, this guy could lead the league in home runs. And if you're buying into that power, it is a lot of upside.
Damn. Exactly. And that's something all these guys would like, right? If we had four picks, we're taking these guys early straight on. That power from the left side is just so much to like. And the same thing with Condit, at a big year late. You talked about that positional versatility. I think he actually helped himself playing third. He was in center a bit, first base, kind of move around the field. That versatility is becoming more and more important. Cag's actually really good at first base. I don't want to say he's a gold glover right now, but he's got a chance to be one of the better defensive guys over there. Not that that matters all that much, but from our standpoint, we're betting on that bat power. Let's get to the bigs, make it happen.
Damn, yeah, Keith, I was going to go to you for the two-way comp. Sorry, I was just trying to see if I could pull off even like a Brendan McKay or somebody that's had two-way talent that's not an Ohtani.
I'm with Carlos. It's a dead reliever. It's super cross body. It's control over command. I've never seen much of a third pitch. He doesn't locate well to his glove side. Like if you wanted to take him and say you're exclusively a pitcher, which I feel like the Pirates did that a bunch about 20 years ago, right? They kept taking two-way guys and picking the wrong side. And you could do that with Cags and say, look, you're a good athlete. We're going to rebuild your delivery to get you more online, work on another pitch, something to get right-handers out. Like there's plenty of raw ingredients there for sure. But the fact that the delivery's rough, he's already had a Tommy John and it's 80 raw power. Like there are very few guys. I don't know if anybody in this draft class really matches him for raw power. I think he's certainly the best in my evaluations. Like, you just got to send him out as a hitter. And to Carlos's point too, there's always the belief, which I think is somewhat founded anecdotally, at least by evidence, that when you get a guy just focusing on the one thing, that you can sort of see more rapid improvement, more than you'd expect to see from a typical 21-year-old. And I was going to follow up on Shooter's point too. I agree, he is a pretty good defensive first baseman. I think he's better than Nick Kurtz. He's better than Blake Burke, who could also go in the first round. I'd try Cags in right field. You got an 80 arm also. Give it a shot and see. And if he can't do it, fine. You move him back to first base. You probably haven't lost very much. I just think, to what Carlos was saying, it's the chase rate. It's the approach. This is a guy who just swings early and often. If you make a mistake, if you throw pretty much anything in the zone, he's got a pretty good chance to square it up. But out of the zone, this isn't a guy who chases a little bit, right? He chases a lot, where it's almost intrinsic, as opposed to, we just need you to get you to make small adjustments. This is going to be a large adjustment he's going to have to make, probably when he gets to high A or maybe double A, when he really gets challenged by better quality pitching. Hmm.
So Keith, while we're on your list and you have Jack eighth, so
I think I'm the low guy.
You're the low guy.
Yeah. I'm low on everybody. I hate everybody.
So your list starts at five. No.
Yes, that's correct.
So can you run through your processes like Carlos mentioned on how you put your list together and then, you know, at least some of the names early on in your list?
Yeah, sure. So my list is I've had others say it's a little more idiosyncratic, and I'm comfortable with that, right? Because my voice and my evaluations are heavily on the list because I'm kind of a one-man shop also, as opposed to, and that's not a criticism of anybody else, like Baseball America, you guys do great work. Pipeline, they do great work. But when you're one person, right, I find at least it makes more sense to put your own voice. And I try to go see as many players as I can and insert that in wherever possible to try to guide my rankings and the evaluations and what I'm writing about these players too. And I saw Cags a ton actually as a sophomore because Florida was so loaded. So I didn't double back to see him this year. Just went off video and the same data that we're talking about here, feeling like a pretty good understanding of who he was mechanically, at least both ways, and could carry that forward and just monitor his performance on TV and on video for this year. So I have him behind guys like Bezzana and Weatherholt, who we've mentioned a little bit, behind the two big pitchers, who I have back-to-back. I have Chase Burns at five, Higgins Smith at six. Honestly, the big separator for me is Smith's had one surgery already. He had Tommy John in high school. Burns hasn't. And not really understanding a ton of what gets these guys hurt, I just lean towards the guy who's stayed healthy. But I'm not going to criticize anyone who takes Smith first at all. I think I might be high on Braden Montgomery. I'd kind of like to hear you guys also chime in on where you see him. Former two-way guy, I guess I could make a little segue there as well. Now just strictly an outfielder. But I think he's got maybe a little bit more untapped potential than a lot of these other college guys. If you want to bet on somebody making a bigger leap, felt like he took a nice step forward this year, transferring from Stanford, Texas, and A&M. Better at-bats, really good contact quality. There might be a little bit more in the tank there in terms of future growth versus some of these other guys who've performed a little bit better, but maybe don't have that kind of future development ahead of them.
Yeah, I do like Montgomery. And I'm also curious, too, we talk about you being the low guy on Jack at 8. We have him at 5. And I'm also curious how you guys view the top tier, because for me, throughout this spring, it has been really difficult to separate these guys. I've juggled it significantly. Yeah. Depending on the scouts you talk to, you'll get a different order. With both these top pitchers, Hagen Smith, Chase Burns, you talk to one scout, he likes Burns. You talk to the next, he likes Hagen Smith. Mm-hmm. I view them all as extremely close. And as long as they're kind of in that top tier, I think they're almost interchangeable at this stage. Like, I wouldn't feel massively confident in anyone beyond like the top three that we have, Condon, Bizzano, Weatherholt. I like those all quite a bit. But I think Montgomery is appealing because, unlike some of these college first basemen we're talking about, he's got a really good athletic foundation. He's got an exciting tool set. He's physical. He has power. I love the left-handed swing. I don't think he has the same contact skills as really every other elite college hitter we're talking about in the class right now. And I also wonder if they're just going to scrap the right-handed swing at the next level. I would be intrigued by that. I don't know how much value you see in like a switch hitter if you're much worse as a right-handed hitter. And I know that has been the question with Montgomery really dating back to his high school days. Mm-hmm. I think he's improved overall in terms of his approach, but his package of power, arm strength in the outfield, athleticism, speed, defense, I think is really compelling. And I really can't see a huge difference between him and a Cags or a Kurtz or these high school players like a Rayner and a Connor Griffin we're talking about. I view them all kind of in a similar range. So I'm not going to get too nitpicky on 6 versus 8 or 4 or 5.
Yeah. Well, I think you talk about the tiering and going into our rankings process. We view our board, that's our big board. This is where we evaluate the talent, whether they get drafted or not. So much comes in the intricacies of the Major League Baseball draft with regards to signability, kind of team placement, what your slot bonus says, what your pool is. So we're kind of ranking those guys by our evaluations. And yeah, we have tons of scouts all over the country. We come together, big group. What we have shifted to is to be more in line with what a war room would be like. What's the draft board's going to look like for a team. 1 through 1,000 is not what it's going to be, right? We're going to split it up into high school pitching, high school hitting, college pitching, college hitting. In the future, we'll move even more so into left-handed arms, right-handed arms, relievers, just making it more of a horizontal outbuild from that standpoint. And it's really helped in viewing the board, right? This year, kind of the high school side, Rayner, Griffin at the top, then that tiering moves down. So the distance between 3 and let's say 25 may not be as big as it looks on paper, right? Those tiers, how they move from the college guys at the top, then you have that next tier. And what I love to examine is just how much do we like this guy beyond that? Is he $100,000 better? Is he 200? Is it a million? How much can we save here? How many guys can we get and move stuff around? But that tiering, like you guys were talking about, is massively important because there's value throughout and guys that you can get just by tiering, keeping them and really identifying what that talent is and really evaluating from that stance. Going to Montgomery, though, and at some point, I think we should talk about some NIL stuff. He did go from Stanford to A&M. Not sure what the package was with that. We can go into more of the high school guys in the future. Or in a little bit, but just from him, from high school, he was probably warranted about $2 million, $2.5 million. He was not an unknown product. He very much being considered potentially in the first round, like the dynamic five-tool guy, switch hitter. I mean, honestly, he was the Steve Nebraska of the group. Throws 100 from the outfield. He's mid-90s on the mound. He hits switch hitter. So he can kind of do it all. But by going to school, he doubled essentially what he was going to make. He bet on himself and went to school, and now he's going to probably floor it at $4.5-5 million. But like you said, I think midway he was off to a great start, and I love what he did from both sides, cutting down the swing and miss. The power was clearly there. Scuffled a little bit in the middle of the season with some swing and miss, but at some point you're just paying for that ceiling. You can't let this guy get past you and then turn into a superstar. And the upside's clearly there. He has pitched in the past. Let's get him more at bats. really good athlete. You bet on those guys to win.
Just to add to the tiers discussion too, I think Carlos, you said there's that top three. Totally agree. Conan, Bazzano, Weatherholt. And to me, Weatherholt, look, he, you know, there's another universe where he doesn't get hurt, and we're talking about he's the one, right? Yep. I think he came in as that guy. I saw him, the swing was great. He was not recovered enough to even play the field at that point, but I was like, that might be the best swing in the draft. And then the next tier for me, however you want to order them, 4 through 10, it's those five college guys and the Rainer and Griffin in yep. some order. And honestly, I'm not going to argue with anybody's order of that. I don't try not to argue with anybody's order, period. But, you know, that to me, that is the second tier. And there's a line under that. And then it gets really subjective, right? It jumbles very, very quickly where the guy I think is 11 or 12, someone else might think is 26. And, you know, we're both going to have pretty good reasons for that. But the clarity that we had even like in the draft a year ago, I just don't see that at all this year. And I'm not hearing that from directors, executives as well, where they say, yeah, there's 9, 10 ish guys at the top, and then there's kind of a clear line beneath them.
Mm. Yeah, that point that you mentioned is really what I felt the entire time. We're fully in mock draft season, and for me, like last year, we had those top five. Everyone knew, or at yep. least we were strongly thinking that they were going to go in some order. Those would be the top five. This year, because I think it is a top 10, Keith said he has a top 10 tier. We view it as a tier of top 10 players. I think everyone in the industry also views it, or a lot of people in the industry, enough. And the fact that Cleveland has such a wide net of players they're seriously considering, I think at this point at one, just makes the kind of chaos and uncertainty really trickle down. And once we get outside of this top 10, after these elite tier of players are off the board, like Keith was mentioning when he was talking about 12 to 25, the gap between that is maybe non-existent. I think this first round is going to be exceptionally chaotic. I think there's going to be a lot of underslotting. We see underslotting happen really consistently in the last few drafts. Anyways, the slots have gone up 8.7%, which is significant. You have the slots going up in a year where we're going from a great draft class to a draft class that we don't view as great. There's going to be a lot of deal cutting made. And so it is impossible and extremely frustrating to try and figure out these mocks, because there's just massive swaths of players that can really fit in any sort of range once you get beyond 10.
Whether you're playing or coaching a doubleheader, or you're a fan in the stands, I don't need to tell you that we're sweating through yet another hot summer. And whether you're playing or watching, hydration is key. Liquid IV is extraordinary hydration for physical endurance, mental clarity, and overall well-being. A single stick of Liquid IV delivers better hydration than water alone, with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients. I love to hop on my bike and ride at the end of a workday. Before I do, I tear open a stick of Liquid IV, add it to my water bottle, and stir it up. It's that easy. 15 seconds, and you've unlocked better hydration. I'm currently partial to the sugar-free white peach, but there's a flavor for you, whether it's strawberry lemonade, raspberry melon, lemon lime, and it's easy. The sticks fit in your pocket. You can add flavor, electrolytes, vitamins, and nutrients wherever you go. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022, that's BA2022, at checkout. That's 20% off of your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
Yeah, I think also that just to follow up, I was working on a mock for tomorrow, and like you're reading my mind here. Like I'm doing the mock, and I'm like, this is too chalk, right? These guys are, it's too many of the top guys. And you think probability wise, that's probably smart, but there's no way somebody who none of us is thinking of as a first rounder is going to get picked in the first round. And we're going to be surprised by the individual pick, but I think what you're saying is we shouldn't be surprised overall that somebody takes someone, no pun intended, out of left field.
Absolutely. And that strategic element of the mock drafts always drives me crazy, because you look and you're like, these guys probably should be off the board sooner, but you know there is going to be a surprise that happens, but you can't predict the surprise before it happens, because that's the whole point in it being a surprise player. You just don't know who it's going to be. You just have to anticipate that it's going to happen. So it makes it
tricky. You know, it's so many words to describe that in writing for the reader too. There's so many intricacies that happened for this guy to get here that is really difficult for me to tell you in words right now.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's jump to a few different topics here. I know there's a lot of fan questions in there as well. Actually, let's go there first, just to keep the fans involved right now. I know there's a lot of action going on in the chat. So Josh asks, why does it seem Nick Kurtz has fallen down lists and mocks after the season ended? And Keith, I'll let you start there because Carlos and JJ and I over at BA, we've covered this a bit. Do you feel like there is an extra knock these days on a first baseman like this?
Yes. I think that people are looking now. You get in your draft rooms, you're having the more serious discussions about everything about the player. And remember, Kurtz had a shoulder injury this spring, and he's kind of been banged up a lot of his collegiate career. He's not had the significant injury where he's missed a whole season. But I have heard from some teams, some people in draft rooms too, we're just concerned about the durability. And that's something you consider. Especially when you're trying to pick in the single digits, right? You don't want to take a guy with a top five pick and then have him just be missing a substantial amount of time going forward, especially developmental time. And then to your point, Scott, like there is just that concern about the ceiling for a first baseman is, it's just harder to achieve, right? The bar to clear to be a regular is higher, and it's harder to see a guy like Kurtz becoming a superstar. I will say I've seen Kurtz mediocre and I've seen him great. I've seen the elite bat speed. I've seen the big power. I've seen him walk a ton. That's the number one thing he does every time I'm in the ballpark. And I mean, it's not a bad thing. I think he really is a very disciplined hitter. But I think as we're lining them up, people are saying, look, there's some durability concerns. And also there are other guys maybe with a higher ceiling, which is why he slid down a couple notches on my last update to my top 100. And he's at 7. Obviously, I still think he's a good player. But it seems like maybe there's some other guys who offer a little bit more upside.
It's amazing the fact that he did have the injuries. I think he was kind of a hot name in the summer where, hey, this guy's got a chance to go 1-1. The same way we're talking about Kags and then Condon. At 7 and 8, you take him. All of a sudden, you're going into your front office, your president, saying, this guy had a chance to be 1-1 last year. We may have stolen him. And I would say, hopefully it happens to the kid. And like you said, he was banged up. We may look back in 6-7 years and it was like, how did Nick Kurtz get to 9? How did Nick Kurtz get to 10? Like that's, he would probably be the number one guy where I'd be like, if he fell, that team's going to be really pumped. Hey, we just got stolen value right here.
Nick Kurtz is terrifying to me because I really want to love him so much. He has such a great approach at the plate. He walks a ton. The chase rate is similar to guys like Bazan and Weatherholt. I actually think the bat to ball skills are some of the best in the class as well. He's got at least plus raw power. I feel so confident about the safety of his offensive profile. And then I think back to Jacob Berry and Andrew Vaughn. And I felt super confident about those guys' offensive profiles. And look what they're doing. Like, that's the risk with a first baseman. Keith mentioned it. The threshold you have to clear offensively is just so high. Even Tristan Casas, he's been a great hitter. He's like, I think 120, 130 WRC plus in the major leagues. I mean, how valuable has he really been in terms of like war and overall value? You just have to hit so much. And if you miss on your offensive evaluation for a first baseman, you don't have much. Whereas with guys who are playing middle of the field profiles, you have a little bit more flexibility and a little bit more room for error. You can still provide value as a defender with your legs playing a premium position. So I really want to love Kurtz, but looking at the tracker, it's so dicey.
So Carlos, who do you love? Can you pick someone out, a first round talent, but it doesn't have to be, you know, some of the top tier that we've been talking about. Maybe go a little bit deeper, mid or late round, that you want to point out.
Yeah, I'm really a sucker for high school profiles. It's a lot easier for me to take on this risk when I'm not the team handing millions of dollars out. So I'm always drawn to high school shortstop profiles. I found myself really liking Theo Gillen this year, going a little bit further down the board. I think among our high school hitters, he has a really appealing combination of hitting ability, track record as a hitter. He has been banged up in the past. He's dealt with some injuries. But when he's on the field, he hits at a high level. He's got power. I think he's athletic. He's fast. I'm not confident he's going to stick a shortstop long term, but I think he could play second base or play center field. So maybe in this kind of middle of the first round or back third of the first round, he would be a hitter that I'm really intrigued with. A pitcher would be William Schmidt. I like him. I love the ability to spin the baseball. I would imagine he's not going to go before Cam Caminiti at this point, but just the velocity he showed this spring, and a chance for a plus-plus breaking ball maybe is super appealing to me, and I like that upside.
I love that Gillen pick there, and what's fascinating about him and tracking him for 4 years, there was a good chance he was going to be the number one player in this class. Now, he had some injury hiccups that affected him. One of the better swings from the left side, it's electric. I think almost definitely destined for the outfield at this point, just with some arm issues. But center field, without a doubt. But honestly, that war is going to come from the bat, from and the fact that he's going to have that hit power combo. Will Schmidt, great pick. His ability to spin the baseball. But Theo Gillen, throughout this spring, and we've followed him for so long, and because of those injuries, I loved what he did this spring. Just really helped mitigate that risk again for the scouting community to say this guy's going to hit. We have a chance to take him early. I would say if he's kind of crept up even more so into that first half of the first round, I wouldn't be surprised. But he's in that tier for first round. I love that pick by you, Carlos.
Nice. I'll take it.
No, go ahead. I'll throw in a name who's – I don't think this guy's going in the first round. I kind of don't understand why. That's Ben Hess at Alabama, who – look, I know he kind of started – he was just on more limited workloads. He was just going five innings. But later in the season, they stretched him out. He was holding 94, 95 deeper into games. It's fastball. He's got four-seamer, two-seamer, slider, curve. He has a changeup. He didn't use it a whole lot, but I think there's enough in there. It's a really good delivery. He's a big, strong kid. He gets good extension out front. I've been asking around the last few days, like, why isn't this guy getting more love in the first round? Just because there's no college starters. Everyone's complaining to me, we don't like the college starters. Well, here's one, and he's in the SEC, and I think he's pretty good. Well, I don't know why he's not going in the first round. That doesn't add up to me. And you know, we're all on the outside, right? We're just doing the best we can with the information we have. But that one just, it's like a sore thumb as I look at my list. It's like college starters go. And this guy's done it in the best conference. One of you was saying earlier, that is the best competition there is. I totally agree. And I think if you post in the SEC on either side of the ball, you go higher in the draft. We had a long history of that. People believe that. And there's the comfort and the safety in your draft room discussions saying, this guy did it in the SEC for 2 or 3 years. So I don't think Ben Hess is going in the first round. Whenever he gets picked, I'm going to be very curious to see where he ends up getting picked, to see if I'm just way off base or if, like, I think he's a top 10 college starter in the draft. That guy usually goes pretty good.
I'll give you a few. You're talking about those SEC guys, but Christian Moore, second baseman from Tennessee, great postseason, great year in general. Now, he's going to be a first rounder.
Yeah.
I love what he brings to the diamond. It's a lot of intensity, aggression, whatever may be there that may rub some people the wrong way. He wants to win. And I would almost guarantee you he's probably a little ticked off that Travis Bezzana is ranked ahead of him on a lot of these lists, because Christian Moore undoubtedly thinks he's the best player in this class. And I think there's a lot to that will help drive him throughout pro ball. He had a huge year. It was almost not seen because Condon was there. Everybody's talking about Cags and the two-way. Bezzana's doing all this stuff at Oregon State. It was almost like he got it pushed to the back burner, which I think will help continue the chip on his shoulder. And then I'll give you a couple of high school guys. I think Tyson Lewis is definitely a name that I'm following closely. Nebraska kid, there's something in the water right now in Nebraska. They got some freaky athletes coming out of there. Big, he's a 6'4 runner, 6'3, chance to stick on the left side, left-handed bat, huge exit velocities. He does not have the polish and the same reps of a lot of the guys in the Big Four, Georgia, Florida, Texas, California. But I think that upside is clearly there for him. So he's definitely a guy that I'll be following closely. I could see late. And then one of my favorites from this spring and over the last 4 years, a New Jersey product, Luke Dickerson. I think that he has a chance to really shock us. If it's in the first round late, that could definitely happen. I think more of that supplemental, it was where we'll come to play, but he's an absolute winner. I think he's got a chance to do some big things as well.
Hey, quick follow before we move on. Keith, for example, when you bring up a name like that, what is the response that you get, whether it's from a team or a scout? You know, I know this is one example, but what is the response that you usually get for, like, why that particular player, especially if it's, you know, a premier college player at a big conference, is not being ranked so high? Like, do you get a specific call out about a tool or an injury?
Sometimes. In this case, that hasn't been true, but in the more, speaking about Hess, but more generally, yeah. Kalen Culpepper, for example, a guy I did see and saw. I saw the good and the bad. I went to the Super Regional against UVA, which was a blast, and saw him smoke a bunch of balls, great swing, and then some sliders down and away. It's like, you can't swing at that. You know, still don't swing. Okay, that's three times in a row. You really need to stop swinging at that pitch because I could get you out with that. Like, so I get it. There's definite pros and cons. And I throw him out there and say, look, it's a college shortstop, good performance. He does these things well, and people could come back with, sometimes it's data, sometimes it's more the scouting look, and say, this is the reason, you know, the chase rate comes up, in zone miss comes up as something quite a bit, or we don't believe he's going to stay at that position. Theo Gillen, where I do think he goes in the first round, but hey, we think he's got to move off the dirt because he's just not throwing well after the injury. Okay, that's fine. That's a good answer. The thing with Hess that's been kind of interesting is it seems, I haven't gotten it yet. Maybe I just haven't asked the right person too. Obviously there's some reason why people don't have him ranked higher, but what I've gotten back is, you know, area scouts saying, well, I put a first round grade on him, and some national guys saying, well, I like him, but the room doesn't like him. Somebody out there clearly doesn't like him. I'm just trying to find that person because I want to hear too. Tell me why I'm wrong. That is, Carlos, you said this at the top of the discussion. One of the great things about the draft is we're going to be wrong a lot. And you have to embrace that. If you don't like being wrong, this is the wrong line of work for you. But I personally find it really fun and refreshing. It's like, go ahead, prove me wrong. Show me all the things I missed and also ways maybe I can do the job better going forward.
So, Carlos, I want to mix in some fan questions here again. So let's get to some heavy hitters. Let's bring in Ryan. Curious about where you think the Iowa pitchers will end up. Seems like a ton of raw upside in both of them. You want to kick that one off?
Yeah, sure. Well, we can start with Brody Brecht. I mean, I think he does have a chance to go in the first round, which seems kind of insane to me because, I mean, this the walk rate that he's shown in his 3 years at Iowa is just so much higher than what we've seen of any college pitcher taken in the first round. He's going to set the new high for career walk rate. He has, to his credit, he has made modest improvements year over year in improving that. I think this year was a 14% walk rate. But when you're talking about a college first round pitcher with even a 14% walk rate, if we're not talking about a 17% career walk rate, that is just massive reliever question marks that typically teams don't want to be drafting a relief pitcher in the first round. He does have tremendous arm talent. I mean, he sits 96, 97. He's been up to triple digits. He's thrown a slider that gets double plus grades. He's an elite athlete. He played football for Iowa's football team. I think people were more maybe disappointed that he didn't take more steps forward with his control this spring because he was only focusing on baseball. He did not work with the football team last fall. So there were really a lot of anticipation for what he was going to do this spring. He's an extremely polarizing pitching prospect. There are some teams I've talked to who would not touch him in the first round. There are other teams that are just intrigued enough with the pure stuff and maybe think their player development group can help him throw enough strikes to where you're getting a starting profile with supreme arm talent. So I'm curious what these other guys might think about Brecht because he does seem to be one of the more polarizing players in the class.
I would think analytics teams are just sitting there with the stuff plus models and they're just begging guys to take him the first round. But like you talked about the walk, it's tough to fix that, the accuracy and the control aspect more so than raising the velocity and whatnot. But you get to the back end of the first round, some teams that think they may have a chance to fix something, just stuff wise, athletic wise, frame wise. I mean, that's a top 10 looking pitcher. Then you kind of bring in what's happened and the track record of what he's done at Iowa with regards to the control. He comes down a little bit, but I don't know, a team like the Dodgers who can fix whatnot, or we talk about the haircuts that you could take. Hey, we get Brecht in the back half of the first round, and then we grab a couple other guys because we cut a deal there. I think he could sneak in with the fact that he's got some unteachableness.
I think he goes in the first round. I think his window probably starts around Toronto at 20, and then that next 4, 5, 6 picks. I think the Dodgers are actually in that group. And of course the Dodgers, right? The Dodgers are going to take him. Next year, he's going to walk 1.5 per 9.
Yep.
And we're all going to say, why wasn't this guy the first pick in the draft? And he's so interesting because somebody said to me at the beginning of the year, that is a high school pitcher in a college pitcher's body. And I can't get the line out of my head because it fits. He's so undeveloped, but so physical, so athletic, so gifted. I don't think he has much of an idea of how his arm works. I feel like the right organization is going to get him in and get him to something he can repeat more. And look, maybe that doesn't solve the control problems, but that's the risk you're going to take, right? That is if you do take this guy in the first round, that's basically what you're betting on. And I mean, the stuff is ridiculous. I saw him right out of the chute. It was cold. He was not even close to what he was by the middle of the season stuff wise. And still I was like, okay, it's really good. And I never saw, I think I saw maybe Chase Burns had better stuff the rest of the season. You know, if you want to just bet on straight up upside and cover your eyes at the walk rate, yeah, he's pretty good. But I also agree with Carlos. We are analytically minded as an industry. And I think the handful of teams that might've been willing to overlook that, like maybe Colorado would have overlooked that. They pick third. They don't have to. They can just take Chase Burns and call it a day.
Okay, next fan question. Let's talk about who could be quickest to go to the major leagues at this point, like a Nolan Shanwell style question here. Now, some of this has to do with the organization, of course, but Luke asked this question from a positional standpoint, who could be quickest to the majors like Nolan? Carlos?
Well, my answer was just going to be simply whoever the Angels draft. I think that would be a pretty decent bet just based on what they've done in the previous years. If you want a hitter who can move quickly, I mean, Travis Bezzana is so polished. All of the top three guys, I could see them moving quickly, but I could also see Nick Kurtz sliding to a range where he's at a team that is maybe a little bit more competitive. You don't really need to work with him too much at first base. You just need to let him hit. Some of these, we talked about college first baseman not being a great track record, but a lot of these college first basemen have moved pretty quickly to the big leagues. So I think he just, in terms of question marks for his development moving forward, Kurtz specifically would be one of the first players that I thought about. For a pitcher, I actually think Trey Savage is kind of an interesting pick at East Carolina. I think he has some of the best combination of stuff, pitchability, pitch mix, and I think he could also go maybe in a range where he's not stuck with a team that is going to be bad for quite a while. Although, again, the draft lottery changes that, so there are some teams picking high up that are pretty competitive now.
I think Keith brings up a good point with Chase Burns to the Rockies there, and with what Paul Skenes had done this year, outs an all-star, incredible stuff. Wasting time in the minor leagues is not something that has been proven to help out young pitching prospects. Get them up. Chase Burns is ready to go. If he gets taken by the Rockies, they're going to have to bring him along quick. And Hagen Smith, the same thing. Already had a surgery in high school. Don't waste years in the minor leagues. Don't waste time. That's at least my opinion for those two guys. I think they can move quick, but especially Burns and the Rockies, you got to get them up. But hitting, I'll throw one in. James Tibbs is going to hit. So like he's a guy, I don't want to call him the Shanuel type, but like the fact that the bat, the ball's there, the power, keen sense of the zone, I think he may have a chance to go quick too.
Okay, Keith, do we still have you?
Yeah, Savage was the name I was going to.
Okay.
Yeah, am I still here?
Yeah, I think you froze for a sec. Let's check. Hold on. Yep, you're good. You're good.
You still got me here?
Yeah, we got you. Got a little grainy, okay. But you're good.
Just to piggyback, I was going to say... Okay. I was going to say, yes, whoever the Angels take. And you, Savage, to me, is you're not really waiting on anything, right? You're just kind of wind him up and let him go. People don't like the arm action. Well, so what? All the more reason to move him quickly through the system to try to get him to the big leagues and into your rotation.
All right, last one. This one coming from me. Can we get your favorite player comp? So Shooter, I'll start with you, as in a major leaguer that you see in a player that will be drafted anywhere. Just, it could be fun or it could be one that you're really, you know, excited about.
Well, I touched on it earlier, but Bryce Rainer and the Corey Seager comps are sure to be there. Similar frame, they're wiry athletic guys, can grow into the frame, left-handed hitter, there's power potential, stick at shortstop, really good athlete. I think that's the most fun. I always hate throwing comps on guys because it sets the expectation bar way too high for their developmental curve. But that's what I would say, Bryce Rainer, Corey Seager.
Yeah, I'm also not the biggest comp guy in the world just because I think they are unfair a lot of times. But Ben Badler, my colleague at Baseball America, put a comp on Connor Griffin that I really did like quite a bit. His was a Joe Adell comp. They're both really elite athletes, super toolsy. Both players who didn't really hit it out of the park on the showcase circuit prior to their draft year, then followed up and had phenomenal springs. I think they're both in the same type of really high risk, high reward profile of player where the upside is tremendous, just given the tools, the speed. Joe Adell also was a pretty talented pitcher. Connor Griffin is as well currently. But I think it highlights kind of the risk inherent in these high school hitters and with Griffin specifically. So I like that one quite a bit.
Do you like comps, Keith?
No, but when they sort of, when they really present themselves, I feel like you go with them. And the one that's jumped out to me this year on Bryce Rainer is Bryce Terang. Not just because they have the same first name, although they spell it differently, but he can really play shortstop, great arm. Both guys probably a little more power than hit, at least at the same stage. But both have also really shown pretty good production and looked good on both sides of the ball at showcases in front of large crowds. And obviously playing in Southern California helps also increase our level of confidence in their abilities. I don't know that I see the kind of huge offensive upside in Rainer for like a Seager, for example, but Terang was a pretty good first round pick. That one's working out really well for the Brewers. And I think if you take Rainer at pick 7, 10, 12, I don't think he gets that far, but if you do, you're pretty happy if you end up with Bryce Terang.
This was awesome, guys. Really appreciate the time. Hopefully everyone enjoyed this. You're going to see all three of these people on Sunday on various shows as well. And of course, you know, we hear from Carlos all the time on Hot Sheet. So let's finish like this. Shooter, do you want to kind of plug your coverage of where people can continue to follow you and everything you're putting out there?
Yeah, we're obviously on Twitter at Shooter Hunt, but at @PBR_DraftHQ, we're kind of going to be filling the voids on Sunday of the draft. Pre-draft, 15 minutes before, just a lead up. Commercial break, first round and supplemental will be locked in, and then recapping with some rapid reactions to the draft on day one, but also what to expect on day two. You can count on that all on Sunday.
Love that. Keith, what about you? One man band, but you'll be busy.
Yeah, one man band. I have some backing players who help me out quite a bit, though. So on draft night on The Athletic, if you're a subscriber to The Athletic or to The New York Times, to their all-inclusive package, doesn't come with free drinks, though. Only bottom shelf. So I'll be breaking down the draft as it happens through the first round. And then after, and I'll do another mock tomorrow, Thursday. I'll do another mock, I think, Sunday morning. And then after night one, sort of my recap of everything that happened, after which I'll kind of shift gears and start going into general thoughts on every team's draft class. And so you can find me on The Athletic. I'll be tweeting at Keith Law on Threads as well. Mr. Keith Law. I'm on all the social media sites. They're all terrible, just terrible in different ways.
The only thing I love is that, yeah, we'll be talking the entire time with kind of less rules, but on Sunday on the Foul Territory YouTube channel. So Keith will join us, Shooter will join us. Carlos will be busy doing MLB Network and their coverage of the draft as well. And I know Keith mentioned, yeah, it's bottom shelf drinks, but maybe if you find Keith at some point in life and you show him proof of your The Athletic subscription, maybe, just maybe, he'll be able to hook you up with a drink at some point. Same thing with Carlos and Baseball America. Subscribe to everything that all three of these guys are putting together. This is the best time of year, obviously, with the draft coming up on Sunday. Thanks to everyone for checking out this special Hot Sheet Roundtable. And for Baseball America fans, we'll see you at the Prospect Pad on Friday when we chat with prospects, and then on Sunday for the draft.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.